This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. When a victim of human trafficking is arrested in a sting operation or a sweep of a labor operation, prosecutors need to know how to differentiate the victim from the real criminals. Later in the show, we'll talk with the person leading that training in the 20th Judicial Circuit of the State Attorney's Office. But first, the numbers of employed Floridians who are barely able to afford basic living expenses has seen some improvements in Florida, according to new data from the United Way. Economic recovery has helped some households struggling to make ends meet, but new data for our state finds wages still lag behind major increases in the cost of housing, childcare, health care, and more. And the United Way says the disparity between take-home pay and household costs is increasingly affecting households in minority communities. Joining us now to explain how the United Way tracks these costs and how much families are able to afford across Florida is Holly Ballard. She's the Director of Financial Stability Initiatives with the United Way for Florida Suncoast. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much, Julie. Glad to be with you.
And to break down how the costs for housing, childcare, food care, health care, and more are impacting low-income houses in Southwest Florida is Spencer Smith from the United Way of Collier County. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How easily are you able to afford living in Southwest Florida? Do you struggle to pay your rent or mortgage with all the other costs that pile up each month? And have your wages kept up with those creeping costs? Give us a call and share your experiences at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So let's start by establishing a few key terms here, the Alice Index, the poverty line, and the difference between the two. Holly Ballard, the United Way, how does the term federal poverty, what does that mean, federal poverty line, and then how is that calculated?
So the federal poverty level is something that is used across the board in terms of a lot of federal programs and federal benefits, but it's something that's extremely outdated and also doesn't really measure the local economies and what's going on in our communities. The federal poverty level for a single adult is lower than really what the cost of living is, and it's a number that is the same no matter where you live in the contiguous United States. So whether you are in New York City or in Collier County or in Miami or North Dakota, the federal poverty level actually is the same number.
So is there any place in the United States where somebody could live at that federal poverty level?
Well, there are places that have lower cost of living than Florida. Even within Florida, you see some counties that have a lower cost of living than others. But really, you would be hard strapped to find anywhere in any of the United States in order to find somewhere that you could afford the basics, especially as you see these big ticket items increasing over time, like health care, like rent, and especially child care.
How often do they update that?
Well, so it's updated each year. However, the updated formula has never been updated since its inception in the mid-60s. This is something that's not widely known, but actually the formula for creating the federal poverty level uses the budget, if you will, from the mid-60s, so a Mad Men era time of when food cost a lot more proportionally, and clothing, for example, used to cost more proportionally, but things like healthcare and rent and home and purchase, childcare, all of those cost a lot less as a percentage of their budget. And so it's really out of whack, which is why United Way's banded together to do some of this research and to fund this research, to partner with Rutgers University to look at what is the true financial cost of living in our communities, because we know the federal poverty level didn't really tell the whole story.
Well, I mean, if they're basing those kinds of ratios on the cost of housing to what was happening in the 1960s, I mean, I know someone who bought a house in downtown San Francisco for $39,000 in the 60s. That would be more than $2 million now. So it's very
exactly
different. So then what's the difference then between that and how you tabulate ALICE?
So ALICE uses federal data as well, but it uses the federal data for the cost of different items in what we call a survival budget. So these are very conservative numbers, and what we use are housing, childcare, food, transportation, healthcare, miscellaneous, so different items that come throughout in a catch-all, and then taxes. That is a survival budget, basically what it actually takes to just get by in today's economy, but very importantly, within our survival budget is not included things like savings or investing in your child's education or saving for your child's education, those things that we know are really important in order to build assets to pass on generation to generation. So that's really important to know that the ALICE threshold, and ALICE stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed, that is very, very conservative of a in terms of a benchmark for what it costs to get by in our economy.
Is that shorthanded usually to the working poor?
Well, yes and no. And I say no because ALICE is a name for a reason, and ALICE is really someone that we all know. That is, it's 44% of Floridians in 2015 fell into this category of either ALICE or underneath the federal poverty level. That's almost one in two Floridians. So we, in United Way, really wanted to shine a light on the that this is our neighbor. These are our teachers sometimes, our nurses, our CNAs, the teller at your bank, the folks at the grocery store. So these are hardworking individuals, and rather than adding the stigma to this individual from terms poverty or some of the stereotypes around that, we really wanted to shine a light that this is a person, i.e. ALICE.
Yeah, nobody likes to be called poor or have that be part of what they're entitled by. That's almost one of two people in Florida falls under the ALICE kind of, you know, paradigm. So it's interesting, that kind of titling. Asset limited, income constrained, and employed. So Spencer, with the United Way and Collier, she mentioned briefly there the survival budget. What is a survival budget, and what would be a survival budget in Collier County?
So a survival budget is going to be basically the bare bones essential of what you need to make as either an individual or a family. It's going to be slightly above the poverty poverty line as well. So, and that's where the whole study came into place. They recognized in 2009 when they started the first study in Morris County, New Jersey, that there was a sizable hidden population of the working population that just was not above the poverty line, but just kind of still struggling to eat meat. And
I mean, you got like paycheck to paycheck, basically.
Essentially, yes. And to Holly's point, we were really trying hard to put this persona in a very positive light. So that's what we've been working really hard on doing. So the survival budget is basically going to comprise of housing, childcare, if you're looking at a family rather than a single person. It's going to be food expenses, transportation, health care, taxes, everything like that. But it's still not going to be what you need to survive in the county. I mean, if you look at the survival budget for housing costs for a single adult, you're looking at $619 a month. You're going to be really hard-pressed to find anything like that in Collier County.
I would be afraid to look at that.
Oh, yeah. Single... Or you're going to be living with multiple people. You're going to have yeah. roommates. You're going to have to make sacrifices in order to survive in the area you are trying to live in.
So the federal poverty line in Collier County sets for a family of four at $24,250 a year. How does that differ from what would be survival level according to the ALICE?
Well, the annual total for survival budget in Collier County for a family of four, this is based off of two adults, one infant, and a preschooler. Our survival budget would say that it would be about $56,000 in order to survive in Collier County. And then again, these are still very bare bones costs. I mean, housing, you're looking at a place that's $990 for a family of four. I mean, you're still going to that's going to be very hard to find in Collier County. So
You're going to be commuting a long
way. Or you're going to be commuting from other areas outside Collier, which is going to add on to your transportation costs, whether it's going to be fuel expenses or your car maintenance. One breakdown, I mean, you could be living on the streets from just car breaking down.
And then that's survival budget or stability budget?
That was the survival budget.
Okay. What would be stability budget? What kind of a budget would a family of four need to be able to bring in Collier County to be able to feel stable and not feel nervous 2 days before every paycheck?
Well, just to show you the difference, you're going from a figure of $56,000 in Collier County to about $92,000 a year.
$92,000 is pretty much what a family needs to make.
Yep. And that's still pretty basic as well. I mean, you're looking at a $1,200 rent a month. You're looking at $1,300 for child care. That's including everything. With two children, that's going to be very difficult. Food, $1,000. I mean, it's not easy to do.
Yeah, and there aren't that many jobs that pay that well here.
No, actually, that not at all. So I think 67% of all jobs in Florida pay less than $20 an hour. And then 3/4 of that percentage only pay $15 or less. So, I mean, it's kind of slim pickings for that.
And I know, Holly Ballard, I know it's hard to generalize, but how does what Spencer tells us about living in Collier and the cost of living in Collier, how does that compare with other parts of the state?
Well, it varies for sure. And you do see varying housing costs since the recession in terms of different counties and how they're faring, in addition to different migratory patterns within our state in terms of commuting. Just as Spencer said, if you can't afford to live close by to where you work, then you live further away, stressing actually the infrastructure when you look at our highway systems in terms of the commutes and stress on families. But really, Collier and other local counties, the rent burden is increasing. And by rent burden, we mean the percentage of families that spend more than 30% of their income on rent. And something that is overlooked often is that Florida, we're actually the state with the highest rent burden of all states, which doesn't really come to your mind in terms of rent, and that you think of, well, California, New York, they definitely have the cost of living. The cost of living there is outrageous. Sometimes the rent, you mentioned San Francisco, but our median income in comparison to our rental costs actually make us the most rent burden state in the nation. And so you have a lot of these stressors on our economy and on the family budgets across the state. And in Collier County, 54% of your households actually pay more than 30% of their income on rent, meaning that they're rent burdened.
More than half of the households in Collier County are rent burdened, you're saying?
Exactly.
And you said that some areas like Miami-Dade or Orlando are seeing their ALIS costs grow, but not for the same reasons?
Well, so the ALIS population, this is really a data point adding two components together. It's the income that someone makes, and then also the cost of living locally. So can you afford to get by where you live? And there's areas where we're having a lot of in-migration from other areas. Our population in Florida is growing. We have net in-migration from other states and from other countries. So we are booming population-wise, but oftentimes some of these magnets for jobs, the Orlando metro area, Miami metro area, in terms of those growth industries that Spencer mentioned that are more service, hospitality, the more that those jobs grow, the more ALIS folks that you will have. And a lot of the new populations from countries, especially with Miami, you see that is really the doorway to America for a lot of Central and Southern American countries, and that a lot of the population growth, and you see the increase in percentage of ALIS in some of our counties, not just because of the economic recession, but also because of a population increase from different areas and what types of jobs those individuals engage in, whether it be hospitality in the Orlando area and some in Miami in terms of the services. So sometimes it's population increase, and that those are the jobs that they're looking for. But now it's where do you house them? where do you send them to school? What's the child care? Are you at max for the child care and for our child care subsidies that are so important for early learning? So it's more of the general social infrastructure that we need for this continuing population growth that Florida is experiencing.
We have a comment that came in from Greg on Twitter. He says, this is why most commute from Lee and Charlotte County, because affordable housing isn't taken seriously by Collier County Development. Although I think, Spencer, there's been a few changes in attitude regarding that. Have you heard much down in Collier County about looking more towards some affordable housing closer to town?
Yeah, so Collier County government actually had the Urban Land Institute come out and do a consensus study on Collier County as a whole. They did. It came up with a lot of different solutions and compromises to meet the county's needs and what the commissioners are trying to get out of everything.
It just takes a while to implement
the community. That. Yeah, and so they are in working now with the different theories, and that we'll see how that moves forward.
How it shakes out. It's just a little late to the table there. But Holly, I want to go back to you and ask you, we're looking at a 2017 study versus a 2014 study. And one thing that I'd like to know is, when we talk about cost of living, are people's paychecks able to keep up with the increase in the cost of living in all of these towns? What has changed?
Well, so you see across Florida, all of our counties have really experienced an actual median income increase since the Great Recession, which is a good thing. But at the same time, it doesn't meet the inflation in that survival budget that we see. Some of the items that our Alice families spend a large chunk of their paycheck on have seen growth in terms of costs, including child care and rent, of course, and health care. But in terms of child care specifically, we find that that family of four that Spencer was talking about, the cost of child care for that family is greater than rent in every single one of our counties in Florida. So this is not just a regional issue. And if you think that there's rent burden, there's also child care burden for that family. And making those calculations about whether or not to spend more time working or going back to school, how do we do that in terms of the calculus of these families when cost of child care is now more than rent in all of our counties?
It can sometimes be more than college in some cases.
Exactly.
And the other problem with that too is you're forcing families to choose whether to work or to stay at home and take care of their kids, which is a noble cause for sure. But then circumstances change in the future, and they lose out on work experience or knowledge, and so it becomes harder for them to find a higher paying job to forward their lifestyle that from moving forward. So those are the things that we are trying to fight and combat with a lot of different. Educational assistance with programs to get parents back into courses to get themselves a better job within the future.
It's a tough question to have to answer when it costs you more to put your child in childcare than you're able to bring home.
Yeah. Nobody wants to make that decision.
Yeah. We're talking about the cost of living in Florida and the struggles to pay the bills as prices rise faster than our paychecks. Give us a call with your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Holly Ballard, the first Alice Index was compiled in 2014 using data from the years leading up to that. And now we have new data in the 2017 update. And you just mentioned that income levels have gone up a little bit. However, the expenses have gone up more so than our income. And you say that credit is a big issue that can really hurt people's cost of living. How do you see that? Are people putting their monthly expenses on credit cards?
Well, more and more components of our life and more stakeholders are actually using credit in some way. So you see really important life decisions and really important life-making moments having credit hinge. And I don't mean credit in terms of the amount of credit on your credit card. I really mean pulling your score. So do you have a poor credit history, or are you subprime versus a prime credit profile? Now, 5 years ago, you saw a lot fewer employers and a lot fewer apartment complexes really using credit as a gateway. And more we're seeing not only is there high rent, but if you have subprime credit, being able to get into an apartment, now it's first, last security deposit. It can be $3,000 for someone with subprime versus prime credit, which we're seeing in different metropolitan areas in Florida where you have a really tough homeless issue that we're all dealing with. One of the underseen and underutilized issues, or one of the issues that we really need to focus on is really this credit burden and this credit hurdle that more and more apartment complexes that are those one affordable complex that used to be the one affordable complex that the homeless agencies would refer and to work with now are checking credit and expecting this really large deposit. Another credit component is car insurance. So car insurance can vary so widely in Florida depending on prime versus subprime credit from $90, $100 to $300, $400 for some of the families that I've seen and worked on their budgets. So when you have a car insurance payment that's greater than the cost of your car, if you're trying to find that affordable home and you need to commute and or need to take your child to school, the calculus of your everyday life becomes even more complex. And really just a few improvements in your credit or bringing it to a prime versus subprime, 50 points can decrease your car insurance rate, decrease the amount of burden that you would need to move into a new apartment, and also employers. Now, one in two employers is pulling credit.
Wow.
So it's really this unseen burden that a lot of families are dealing with and that we can really work with employers and work with some of these folks to say this is an unneeded and an unnecessary burden for our ALICE families.
We have a call coming in from John in Fort Myers. John, what would you like to say?
Yes, I'm calling because I grew up my whole life here in Fort Myers, and I am currently looking for a home, and I cannot for the life of me find anything under $120,000, and I really don't want to pay that much for a home. I remember not even 10 years ago, there were homes for $50,000, $70,000, and they were full homes. The home I'm currently living in, my father-in-law purchased it at $30,000. It was built in the 30s, and it's falling apart. I'm currently living there now, and it's appraised at $85,000. So it seems like the market is definitely being inflated from my eyes. And I was just wondering if anybody out there knows of a resource to find homes that maybe are for locals, not for out-of-state or vacationers, that are more reasonably priced.
I think you're facing the quandary that a lot of people in this ALICE study are also facing. And I'm looking over here at Spencer, and he says, what do you think, Spencer?
The best way I can give you advice on moving forward with that is looking at some of the assistance programs that we can offer or find resources through the 211 call center. We work with a lot of different banks. We get a lot of different information from them with first-time home buying credits and different financial incentives to go through them for lending. And they work with you very hard. They have money to give individuals like yourself looking to buy a home potentially for the first time. It's just people don't utilize the services that are available to them all the time. So that would be my one piece of advice to you.
So you would tell John to call the 211?
Yeah, you can look at 211. You'll get the Lee County 211 office if you call 211 from there, or you can call us. We have... If you're looking to move to Collier, but it sounds like you're having a hard enough time in
Fort Myers.
Yeah.
So, that John, does that answer your question? I'm going to give you at least one place to go and check out 211.
Yeah, that helps out a lot. I actually work in Naples, so anything between Fort Myers and Naples works for me.
All right, we'll try that 211. Thanks for calling in, John. We have another call coming in from Teresa, who is Teresa's in Naples and has a question for us. Teresa, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that I have a relative that works for the fire department of Collier County, in Immokalee, actually, and he only makes $11.26 an hour, and trying to get ahead is no possible way he can get ahead, but he loves what he does, and he likes helping people, and I'm just looking for some guidance to help give him some guidance, what he can do to get ahead.
That's another good question. I think a lot of people are asking a very similar question. And Spencer, as you mentioned earlier, the 211 information line might be of use. And we were talking earlier about another way that you have for people to try to help themselves a little bit is by filing their taxes. I don't know if this applies to our caller, but you told me before that a lot of times people could claim a lot of money by just filing their taxes.
Yeah, so we try to push out a lot of programs that are going to provide and support self-sufficiency through the individual. Our VITA program, which is Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, basically we will go out and do your taxes for free. This past year in Collier County alone, we saved over $70,000 in tax preparation fees just because people didn't know that they could get their taxes done for free. And we're trying to push that out more and more. The other thing is we had almost $650,000 be brought back into the county with 377 filings. So we're still trying to increase those numbers.
So on average, people that do have somebody professionally take care of their taxes for them with you guys, how much are people generally getting back?
They're saving about $200, up to $200 on average for a preparation fee. And then on top of that, I think our average filing this year was about $1,700.
But that would help anybody.
That would help anybody. The other thing that we really try to do when we push out with our volunteers who've been trained by the IRS is trying to get them applying for all the credits that are available to them. The earned income tax credit is a huge one. Depending on your family's demographic and makeup, you can earn up to $6,000 back into your pocket based off of your situation. that is a huge amount of money for somebody to receive right off the bat. We're also working with banks to try to get them to open and do financial literacy courses there so that they can invest that money and save it, and so that they won't have to further down the road. They'll be able to pay their utility bills. They won't have to go get and seek assistance from other avenues. We also have other programs like our IDA Match Savings Program, where we are basically matching every dollar saved by that individual with $8. Up to $500. So our match will be $4,000. They can use that money to go and further their education to get a higher paying job. So these are the support systems that we are trying to implement in United Way of Collier County. And I'm sure other places are doing systems like this.
Well, you know, and I'm hearing this and it sounds great, but when I'm thinking about the people that are qualified and that would fit the ALICE, you know, constraints, I don't think that somebody who works full time might see themselves as somebody who would qualify for help. I mean, they might not consider themselves somebody that should be seeking help, or I don't know, maybe there's like a certain pride level. Do you see that ever with people?
Yeah, and that goes straight back to the marketing effort for this. We are trying to put a positive light on this because, you know, ALICE isn't it's not just the poor. These are working class individuals. These are the nurses, firefighters. These are your county employees.
It's like under $12 an hour.
Yeah, these are your family and your friends. These can be your coworkers. These are people you care about, and we want to make sure that everybody knows that and addresses that. The other thing that we're trying to do is we're trying to offer toolkits to individuals and families to have resources available to them to actually pull themselves out of the poverty, putting them into a stability, a stable financial situation. We also have toolkits for employers with little tips and tricks that they can implement in their business at no cost to them that will save employee retention. Their employees will have more money to utilize in their own personal day-to-day lives. And it could be as simple as having flexible work schedules, because some of the individuals, especially in the hospitality industry, are going to have multiple jobs. They're not going to be able to afford living in Collier County on minimum wage. So they might have one, two, three jobs that they need to have a flexible schedule and understand that, you know, hey, I don't have a car either. I might have to take the bus to and from these jobs. Just little things like this that employers can be aware of to make both parties' lives a lot easier.
And I want to turn back to Holly Bullard. We have some questions coming in on Facebook. And, for example, Brad Taylor says, what actions, if any, is the state or our counties taking to lower the rent burden given that our state has the highest? Also, do we know of any employers that are being proactive in bringing wages up to decent livable level? Do you know anything about employers or the state or county doing anything to address any of this, Holly?
Well, in terms of the I really wanted to jump back around the earned income tax credit in a bit as well. But in terms of the statewide, our economy and where we're looking at in terms of those jobs that have those livable wages, there are growing industries in Florida, and that's where a lot of our United Ways are partnering with those employers to think about some of these different initiatives and thinking outside of the box for ALICE, just as Spencer was saying. Some of those industries that you see are across the state in our I-4 corridor with the technology corridor. We're seeing manufacturing come back in some sectors of Florida, healthcare, and some of these sectors that have what we would call career laddering opportunities that actually have a foot in the door. Maybe you don't need a bachelor's to get, for example, a CNA and LPN, but then actually over time the demand for those jobs across our state is high, and those are the types of jobs that we're looking towards in terms of partnering with both the employers and employees to make sure that they see those opportunities and that there are plenty of jobs in our state in terms of those under $20 an hour jobs that Spencer had mentioned. If we can start to get the bigger picture of some of these industries that are growing in different parts of our metro areas, you have a finances and IT in Miami area. We have the manufacturing in Southwest Florida, Sarasota area. And IT, transportation, logistics. That there's some jobs. If you're getting your CDL, your truck driver's license, that you don't need a bachelor's per se, and you could be making $40,000-$50,000. HVAC, plumbing, some of these jobs that you just need a certification. And guess what? There's federal dollars that are there for ALICE families and for low income Americans called Pell Grants. And there's a lot of dollars left on the table, both with our low-income high school seniors and for adults that don't realize that they qualify for Pell Grants if they're looking for a certification from our community college system that often has these high demand, high wage job certifications available for you. So it's really adamant. I think that the state does a good job from the economic opportunity. The Department of Economic Opportunity has some really good data. That local data, United Ways are starting to look at in terms of promoting some of these high wage, high demand career laddering opportunities, so that if you are going back to school, if you're looking for a certificate, if you're looking for an opportunity, that you know which industry to go in and which industry has those jobs in demand at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like to go back to the Earned Income Tax Credit, and Spencer's absolutely right around what a powerful tool that is, and there is a lot of money left on the table. It actually turns out 1 in 5, and these are ALICE families, 1 in 5 ALICE families who are eligible don't claim the Earned Income Tax Credit in Florida. That is $1.1 billion left on the table, left up in D.C., every year that should be in the pockets of ALICE families in Florida. In Collier County alone, it's estimated over $15 million is left on the table. That's really why United Way does taxes. It's in the free tax preparation industry. We really want to connect folks to those tax credits and promote policies like the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is actually the most effective federal anti-poverty policy.
Well, we'll definitely be following up on that coming this April to remind people that it's there and that it's available. And I know we did this past April. But at this point, we're going to have to leave it there because we've run out of time. But I do want to thank our guest, Spencer Smith with the United Way of Collier County. Thanks for coming in again.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And we'll see you again in April. Also, Holly Bullard, the United Way of Florida Suncoast. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, figuring out who is the victim and who is the perpetrator of a crime is usually fairly cut and dry, but when it's human trafficking and the people being exploited are forced to do things that are illegal, it gets more complicated. Up next, we'll talk with a new training program for prosecutors to identify human trafficking victims. That story is next. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.